Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Well, so Amy, either we both have to jump out the window or neither of us have to jump out the window.
What happened?
Well, neither of our picks have become the Attorney General.
The Attorney General is?
It is Catherine Hanaway. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's who's been in. Wow. We really nailed the execution on that one. Catherine Hanaway is the new Attorney General designate.
You know what?
Designate, or is it designate?
Designate. I think it's designate.
Attorney General designate. That doesn't sound right.
No, I don't think that's right. Listen, here's the silver lining, is that Vivek Malik will still be looking out for my stuff.
And Billy Corgan will still be writing good music for Smashing Pumpkins.
Okay.
Yeah, so Catherine Hanaway, real dark horse candidate. None of us saw this coming.
Well, Missouri Times had her up there.
Yeah, but none of us saw this coming. I don't know. We just found out about it last night. Okay.
That was like their third pick. At any rate, so, congratulations to Catherine Hanaway, Attorney General
in the state of Missouri.
Fine state of Missouri.
Time to go to the guest line. Partner and Managing Director of One Private Wealth, Dave Simons, joins the show every Tuesday at 10 o'clock. Hello, Dave.
Well, remind me never to ask the two of you for your stock market predictions then.
Well, Why? Did you know?
We just found out about this. What do you want from us?
Wait, Dave, did you know? Did you have the inside scoop?
Well, when I talked to Catherine this morning, no, I did not know. Oh. No.
Did you know Andrew Bailey was bouncing for the FBI?
Oh, yeah. I knew that part, but...
No. Did you know it before yesterday?
Hey, Chris, that's inside information. Okay. I am not privy to, you know...
Well, last question. Do you have any unclaimed stuff?
You know, actually, I had looked at that a few years ago, and the answer is no.
Yeah.
But I checked it just in case.
Nice. Well, let's get to business, Dave, before we waste more of your time, because we are good at that.
Yeah. How does it affect your stocks now that we know Catherine Hanaway is the new Attorney General of Missouri? Should we?
You know, all of Wall Street was patiently waiting for this breaking news, and now we can go about our business. So thank you.
All right, Dave. Apparently, something historic, rather historic or interesting, has happened, and that is the U.S. stock market was up in May, it was up in June, and it was up in July. And that successive 3 months of the stock market being up is pretty rare.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Amy, that normally if somebody said, hey, the market's up 3 months in a row, you'd say, oh, okay, that's not a big deal, is it? Well, normally, no, except... For this time of year, there's an old saying, sell in May and go away. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, if you look at the history of the market, over 80% of the gains of the market, believe it or not, have come from like the middle of October into April. But you have to be careful of following that because it's very erratic. And so you just have to obviously stay invested long term. But you're exactly right. This year has sort of defied the historical narrative. In that since 1950, and I'll do the math for you, that's 75 years, okay? In 75 years, this was only the 17th time the market was up May, June, and July consecutively. Oh. And to add on to that, it's pretty good news. As I like to say, gains beget gains. It's very common when you're in a bull market, it just kind of continues to roll and roll and roll in that. When I looked at the other 16 times in the past 75 years, the market was up 14 of those times over the next 12 months with an average gain of about 12.5%. Now, obviously, I got to give the legal disclaimer, no guarantee, past performance, all that good stuff. But history is pretty clear that when the market has a good summer, the gains continue for some time.
So the next question is why? Like, why is this happening?
Well, it's interesting because it's a little bit of a timing thing. You had that big sell-off in April, remember, Liberation Day, and the market said, nah, we don't think so. We don't like that. And the S&P 500 from top to bottom fell close to 20%, so roughly about a bear market. Well, then once Trump kind of backed off on that, at the same time that corporate earnings were coming in and they were very strong, stronger than expected. By the way, with the second quarter over, obviously on June 30th, but most companies have reported their second quarter earnings by now. A few months ago, analysts thought the average S&P 500 company would report an earnings gain of about 5% from a year ago. 5%, okay, not bad. The average company came in at 14% gain. Just huge. So guys, something interesting is happening here where not only net profits are going up much better than expected, but gross margins are going up even in this world of tariffs. And Wall Street has been rejoicing since the bottom in April. And also that inflation, the fear that inflation would start to come back has not materialized. We don't know if it will by the end of the year, but this really has been a bit of a Goldilocks situation where everything is just right and investors have celebrated.
You know, Dave, we've talked about the influence of the president of the United States on, for instance, oil prices and gas prices. And you're like, the president doesn't have the direct influence that so many people attribute to him. When it comes to the stock market, one, how much does the president affect the stock market? And two, does he or she affect the stock market equally for good or for bad? Or is it easier for the president to affect the stock market negatively and more difficult for him to affect it positively or vice versa?
Yeah, great question, because I get asked that quite a bit. The president has very little impact on the immediate direction of the stock market. Now, I will say this, and this is not a political statement one way or the other, but Donald Trump is a little different because he tweets so much and he can have an impact depending on how verbose he is in terms of, well, this is what I'm going to do today to this industry or this company. You're like, ooh, it's not so much the overall stock market. What Donald Trump has had more of an impact on are individual companies. So for recently, Intel, the long surviving semiconductor chip manufacturer, and now Trump is, first he talked about, I demand the firing of the CEO. And I'm like, oh, don't do that. Please don't. Let's keep the difference. Let's keep that Chinese wall between corporate America and the government. But anyway, it really impacted Intel to the negative side. You don't normally see that. Well, now, if you've seen the news, all of a sudden, the government has taken a 10% stake in the company, and now Intel stock is soaring. These are different times with this particular president, but these are one-offs. And in the general direction of the stock market over time, not as much impact. Actually, the Fed, and then to a lesser degree, Congress, since they're the ones actually spitting out the bills and legislation, they have more of an impact than the president.
So speaking of the Fed, we expect at some point rates to be lowered. I think, we know that the president wasn't very happy with the fact they did not lower rates the last time they had the opportunity. Is the expectation next time around they will?
Yeah, the odds are, there are betting odds, so to speak, and generally they're pretty accurate. And it's over 80% right now say that the Fed will lower rates in September at its next meeting, a quarter of 1%. Now, this Friday, though, is going to tell us a lot because they've got the annual confab known as Jackson Hole, as in Wyoming. So all the Fed officials there, a lot of big bankers, financial experts, you typically have the Treasury Secretary show up there. It's a big deal there. And on Friday, Jay Powell then will kind of close with public statements. And I think he even takes questions from the media. We'll know after that. Oh, okay. Because he's going to do a very, very good job of trying to give little hints of where the Fed's thinking is at this point. And if he's very, very hawkish, which means against rate cuts, you're going to see the market sell off a little bit. The market is poised right now to get a little help from rate cuts. I think they're going to do it. So I'm not expecting really any fireworks from Friday.
If you are looking at your own portfolio, I know you mentioned the months of like May, June, July, and then what that portends if you have a good summer into fall. When is the best time to do your year in review? Or do you picture you prefer multiple assessments throughout the year?
Wow. That is such a wonderful question, Eamon. I'll tell you why. Because I have found it's very much like insurance, that people either have too little or too much on an individual basis. And it's the same with reviews. Some folks will look at their stuff every day. Many people do. And it's so easy now. We've got 24/7 access to our stuff online and on our phone. That's okay if all you're doing it is just looking at it for informational purposes. Well, the market did this or that today, and how did my portfolio hold up? Okay, that's interesting. And then do nothing about it. The problem is too many people might be led to take some action just based on one day, which is never a good idea.
Panic.
But an action, yeah, that's it. Or greed when things are going well. Ooh, I should increase my positions in that very aggressive stock at the worst time. But in terms of a sit down, full review, really dig into it, I at least once a year and typically twice a year. And at what time of the year, it doesn't really matter. So if you want to do it once at the end of the year, at the beginning, and then do it again at the summer, you're still going to look at your stuff. Obviously, you get your statements, whether it's online or the old fashioned way, you'll get an idea. But in terms of really sitting down to make sure your plan is intact, no more than once or twice a year, because otherwise it could lead you to make changes because of those two twin emotions of fear and greed. Never good.
So this is it kind of leads me to a question about stocks like Netflix, which I know exploded, and Nvidia Now, which is the thing going back to 2022 in the last 3 years, it has just absolutely skyrocketed.
Right.
And, you know, hundreds of percentage points. So like when you see stuff like that, the question is, well, is there a bubble here or is this the future? Just hang on to it. Because, you know, if you had stock in Apple in the 80s, you're probably doing really well right now if you held on to it the whole time or if you bought more. So how do you handle something like that?
Yeah, this is a topic that I could do a whole seminar on, because it's really, I hear this all the time now. And every time the market's doing really, really well, which it has for the last several years, frankly, since the bottom of 22, you start to hear these fear mongers out there. Well, this is just like 99 and 2000, just the internet bubble back 25 years ago. Here we go again with AI. And I'm like, guys, I may not be the most bullish person in the world, but you're all smoking something, because I lived through it. I managed money through that. There is no comparison. Back then, you had new IPOs coming to market every day that actually weren't even producing anything. They had no revenue, but all they said was, we're a new .com stock. Oh, let's buy. And their IPO prices would double or triple within a few days. We have nothing like this. Nvidia is a real company. With strong, strong earnings. This isn't a buy, sell, or hold recommendation. In full disclosure, I will tell you, I personally own it, and we have it for clients. We're not selling, even though it's done really, really well. We have pared back along the way. We've been prudent, but those are the kinds of companies that are real and in the right spot. So I'm not saying the market doesn't deserve to come back a little bit. There is some greed that's starting to come in and filter back in. And we see it in the sentiment polls. I would like a little timeout. I would like a little froth off the top. But I'm still constructively bullish going forward with a lot of these big tech names, even after their huge run-ups lately.
Dave Simons, the information you give us every week makes us smarter, and we appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much, you two. You have a great rest of your week. We'll talk next Tuesday.
You too.
Dave is the partner and managing director at One Private Wealth, and he's with us every Tuesday just after the 10 o'clock news. I mean, his intent is to make us smarter. I don't know if it works.
I feel smarter.
It's about retention.
Well,
yeah, he could tell you all the things that you need to know, but you got to remember them.
But that's on us.
That's on us.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great, though. It's Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM KMOX.
9 points out of 10 in the homestand. Luke G.
Well, if you're like most of the people listening, you're probably wondering, why are you playing a Milan Lucic highlight right now? Well, the Blues have signed Milan Lucic to a professional tryout for this upcoming season. So kind of an interesting move.
So not a guarantee to make the roster.
But it is a tryout agreement. He's 37 years old. He did not play last season because he had to enter the NHL-NHLPA Player Assistance Program. There was an issue. There was a domestic and an issue with his wife. I think she did not agree to testify. They didn't press charges, so that got dropped. He took a leave of absence from the Boston Bruins in November of 2023. In 2023-2024, which was his 17th NHL season, he had 2 assists in 4 games. So he really hasn't played in a couple of years. He is an older guy. He did win the Cup with the Boston Bruins in 2011. A bit of an interesting move. Haven't had a ton of time to look into it. Haven't seen if Doug Armstrong made a statement on it yet with this signing. But yeah, I don't know.
I mean, we just talked about this yesterday, right? About athletes, and it seems like we have a much higher tolerance for players who are good and who contribute to our team's winning if they've done something wrong off the field, off the ice. That it's almost like we go to bat for them, and we're not very quick to say, okay, I don't want you on my team anymore because I don't want players like you. I don't want people who, you know, hit women or commit violent crimes or whatever it is, right? I don't know what the guy did. I wasn't there for it. I know she dropped charges. I know there are a million reasons why women drop charges in situations like this. And it isn't always because, well, actually he did nothing wrong. It could be because she's afraid. It could be because she just doesn't want to go through the whole process because it's traumatizing. I mean, who knows? There are a million reasons that she could have decided not to do this. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't sit well. It doesn't mean that he's actually guilty of something, but it doesn't sit well. We just had this conversation yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, even without the incident, it's an interesting signing or opportunity because he's an older guy. He's not a prolific goal scorer, right? He's kind of a physical presence on the ice, obviously a veteran presence on the ice, but it's an interesting tryout anyway. As I said, he hasn't really played in 2 years because he did sign with Boston again in the summer of 2023, 4 games into the season. He took a puck to the ankle, placed on long-term injured reserve by the Bruins. That's the November, that November, while he was still out of the lineup because he was injured. He was arrested in Boston. Now, it just says for a domestic incident involving his wife. He pled not guilty to assault and battery. She dropped the charges, or the charges were dropped because she refused to testify. And then he didn't play for the rest of the 23-24 season, and he entered that player assistance program. So it's just kind of an interesting opportunity that the Blues are giving Milan Lucic, partly because he's a physical presence. He's older. I know that his fitness was kind of an issue, at least at the beginning. And it's not like, well, you're taking a chance on a 30-goal scorer. That's not who he is.
Right.
You know, he's got a lot of penalty minutes. he's one of those guys that's hated around the league.
So if you had to guess, does he make a roster? Does he make the Blues roster?
I would say no, but I feel like that's, if not an uneducated guest, it's a minimally educated guest because I don't know a lot about this right now. And so it's a minimally educated guess. But again, you know, he might get 7 to 10 goals. I mean, that's historically what he's gotten in an entire season. And that's 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, he was scoring. So he's a physical presence, but also the game has changed. You don't really have your fourth line as the goon line like it used to be, right? You didn't have a Tony, you don't have a Tony Twist line, a Reed Lowe line. You don't have that anymore. You roll four lines of guys that have speed and skill and so forth. So, and not that Lucic isn't skilled, he is. It's just an interesting signing for a guy that late in his career. Yeah, so we will follow that story. Quick note, too, with the collective bargaining agreement with the NHL, next season they're going from 82 games to 84 games.
So this upcoming season.
Well, not the one after this one.
After 25-26.
Yes, so 26-27 season. Okay. They'll go from 82 games to 84 games, and also they will be shortening the preseason, which is a great move. I think it's going to be like four games.
I mean, how much preseason do you need?
Not nine games. So, yeah, it'll be shortened. So I think that's a good move. If you're going to extend the regular season, you got to shorten the preseason.
Cardinals ended a losing streak last night. They are in Miami taking on the Marlins. They had the first of a three-game series there. We're going to talk to Kyle MacLellan, former Cardinals pitcher and host of the Chatter's Box podcast. Kyle joins us next on KMOX.
The pitch. Strike three call for a Redbird winner. A slider catches Sanoa looking, and this ballgame has come to an end. A two-hour, 41-minute game goes to the Cardinals by a final tonight of 8-3.
Cardinals did end the losing streak yesterday in Miami with the win in the first game of the series. They're back at it tonight, 2 of 3. It's the second of three. 4:45 pregame show on KMOX, then a 5:40 first pitch. You can listen to it right here or the Odyssey app. Time to go to the guest line. We got former Cards pitcher with us and host of the Chatter's Box podcast. It's Kyle MacLellan on the show. How's it going, Kyle?
It's going good. How about you guys?
Oh, we're great. We're happy the Cardinals ended that five-game losing streak. And it wasn't a lot of people talked about the weekend series and against the Yankees. And you've got this team that has a huge following coming into town. The Cardinals have a huge following coming into town. And it was just pretty sparse in the ballpark. You didn't see a ton of fans there. I know the weather kind of sucked. But when you see something like that, as a former Cardinal who pitched in front of a ton of fans, what do you think?
Well, I mean,
your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
I've had conversations with some of the guys on the current team, you know, and you realize that some of these guys that have been there, they haven't had that experience of a Wednesday night against, you know, flip it. I know the Marlins are they're at the Marlins, but if the Marlins were here and you go on a Wednesday night, it'd be packed. You know, you got 40,000-45,000 people there. And it's just you look at it and realize like, man, that's we had it so good for so long. And then you look now and you're like, man, there's just a lot of factors that go into this. And it's tough. It's tough for the players. It's tough for the fans. It's tough for everybody, you know, to be in this. I mean, the players don't want this. You know, they want fans to be out there. They want to be in first place. They want to be going. And it's just a stretch that they're being tested, you know, to come out and compete. I'll never forget. We had a time where we were struggling and it looked like we weren't going to get in the playoffs. And I remember we had a meeting and they said, hey, we owe it to ownership. We owe it to the fan base. That we've got to come out. We're professionals. We're being paid. We have to come out and we've got to compete. And we got a long month and a half left, you know? And so, but we got to put that behind us and we got to come out and do everything we possibly can. So your veteran guys are going to be really important right now. It's a tough spot for the players because you're playing for yourself. It becomes a selfish thing. I'm playing for the rest of this year to get my numbers, to put myself in a position for next year, whatever that is. But you got to find that motivation to go out there and compete because you owe it to the fans, you owe it to ownership, and you owe it to yourself to go out there and do the job that you're expected to do.
Yeah, it is. It's noticeable because Cardinals fans are famously devoted to showing up to Busch Stadium. We talked about how when it comes to attendance numbers, the Cardinals are always number two sandwiched between the Yankees and the Dodgers, which is insane for this market. I imagine when you played and you're playing in front of a packed stadium, did it feel like a shock when you would go to a stadium where there were maybe 8,000 fans in the seats and it just felt so different?
Yeah, we say it all the time. One of the big things I think that the Cardinals had in terms of recruiting free agents was that, you know, you get these guys that are playing for other teams that have 10, 11,000 people during the weekday, and they come to Busch Stadium on a Wednesday against a last place team that they're playing for, and they're looking around going, this is unbelievable. You know, like, this is crazy. And I do a lot of stuff with the team still and the corporate sponsors, and I tell them all the time, like, if it's not for you guys and the corporate partnership and sponsorships that we have, that allows us to create this environment, you know, to where other players come here and say, this is where I want to be. And, you know, I've said all along, too, like, the fans have showed up, and we have amazing fans and all that. We've also had winning baseball for a long time. You know, when you're going to the playoffs and you're going to the postseason and that you're just in the stretch, it's expensive to go to games. You know, it takes a lot of time. You're trying to carve out time out of your schedule and do all that. And so it has to match, right? The fans are going to be there because they want to watch a competitive product, and ownership knows that. And the front office knows that. And they're trying to battle through this. We just haven't had this stretch with the Cardinals in over 20 years. You know, it's been, maybe you have a down year and then you're back at it. And, you know, it's just kind of caught up with them, and they're trying to battle through it and make the right decisions. You look at the trade deadline. That's another hard one for the players. When you look and your best players are getting traded, you know, that's a tough one. You're looking around and going, okay, who's next? Who's going to be here? You're getting young guys that are getting the opportunity. So a lot of challenges that they're having, to go through. And, you know, from the fans' standpoint, you know, it's a lot to go to those games. So you want to make sure you're going to see a competitive product. And, you know, hopefully it flips around and comes back, because it is tough. It's tough when you see it on TV and you see the highlights, or you're watching the game, or you go to the game and you look around and you're like, man, you know, there's half the amount of people here that we're used to seeing.
So obviously, Kyle, it's about winning. Winning is number one, and I know it doesn't solve it for every market. Like in Tampa Bay, they have difficulty drawing people, even when they're really, really good and actual World Series contenders, but not in St. Louis. If you're a World Series contender, people will show up. So as we go through this transition to a new president of baseball operations who will take over soon, and knowing that there needs to be a lot of work done at the minor league level to strengthen that again, how quickly do you think this team can be not just competitive in the division, but National League competitive?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the division, and I think it's attainable. I mean, you know, the division isn't something you're like, oh, man, they got no chance against, you know, that team. It's not the Dodgers going out there putting together five aces in their starting rotation and, you know, and all these superstars all over. So I think division-wise, you know, it's very reachable. Couple right moves and free agents, you get in there and you're right back in this thing. And a couple of these prospects that you trade for, these trades are going to be important. You know, when you've traded guys for the last couple of years, you need to return on that. You need to make sure that you hit on those and that those guys come in and help give you a boost for several years to go. But, you know, they're going to have to sit down and evaluate where they need to make the changes at, and where they're going to have to go. And, you know, it's on the free agent side, it's going to be a little bit harder, you know, when guys have been in here the last couple of years and it hasn't been packed and they haven't been a winning team. You know, that's a big part of recruiting in this free agent side. You go get these guys that they want to win. You know, a lot of these guys, some guys just want to get paid and they don't care. But I tell you what, there's a lot of guys, they want to be in a competitive environment, and every day they show up, they want to have a chance to get to the postseason and compete for a World Series, and you want to be one of those teams that's a vehicle to give them that. So I think with a couple adjustments, I think they can get there. You know, I like the young talent they have on the team, and the young guys are getting a lot of valuable experience right now and exposure to see what they can do. That's what I said. They're playing for next year right now. They're putting themselves out there and showing the front office and staff what they're capable of doing, and they're battling for a starting spot next year.
Speaking of those younger players, you know, like the Brendan Donovan and Burleson types, and Nootbaar even, who's, I guess, a veteran at this point. I think we know who those players are. I feel confident we know who they are. But it's still guys like Jordan Walker. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
What do you think we're looking at? Because it does seem like he's more comfortable at the plate now than he was at the beginning of the year or even last year.
Yeah, I mean, this happens all the time. You know, you get these guys that come up and they're big prospects or they have, you know, a great first year, and then all of a sudden the book gets out on them a little bit and guys know how to pitch them and make adjustments, or batters have seen their stuff a few times through the lineup. And it's hard to make that jump from, you know, come up, have expectation, and then actually live up to that. That's a really tough hurdle to overcome for some guys. And some guys it takes, you know, in the first year they come up, the second year they have a better year and they're off and running. Other guys, it takes a few years to kind of develop. So, you know, with a guy like Jordan Walker, they've, you know, been with him, you know, several different times, but he's still young. You know, he's still got a lot of potential, a lot of opportunity. And, you know, a couple of years ago, you remember, it was like, well, you know, we want you to do it this way and hit, and you want to do it this way, and you're trying to figure out who you are and what you do. And had a couple different, you know, coaches changes that working with him and philosophies and things. So, you know, that's a big part of it, is those guys, those young guys that you developed that have come up in the system and have been there for 2 or 3 years, can they take that step to even that next level? And can those guys that you expected to come in and be a contributing part, can they be everyday guys that you can count on and plug in there? That's why I like seeing Mason Wynn still out there. He's, you know, obviously in his press conference saying he was battling some injuries. It's not great, but he's still out there competing. And that's, you're going to have to do that, you know, especially in a time when your team's not competing, to not shut it down for the rest of the year and go out there and compete and learn what it's like to play every day, because that they're going to count on that going forward.
Kyle McClellan, we know that over the weekend, Rob Manfred, the commissioner, in talking about the likely expansion to 32 teams in baseball, we know markets like Charlotte and Nashville and Portland are on the list of possible new team destinations, but there might be some realignment that goes with this. If that happens, I mean, we've seen a bunch of different mock proposals, like the Cardinals being in a division with just the Reds, Cubs, and Brewers. It would just be a four-team division. We've seen some other dramatic realignments where maybe teams switch leagues. What would you think if they did something like that?
So I was actually our player rep when I was there, and I was on the negotiating committee. And back in 2011, we negotiated a CBA, and we actually floated the idea of, like, massive realignment, to where you get it to where the travel's a little bit better, because now you have teams, you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates are still in the National League Central. Well, that doesn't make sense geographically, right, if you look at where teams are now, and you can make travel a little bit easier on them, because you realize in some of these situations, some of these teams are traveling a huge amount more distances than other teams in their division. A little different now that they don't play in the division as much. But I'm all for it. Look, I think baseball is chasing football right now, right? So their NFL is on fire. NFL is, you know, I mean, people are wanting to watch it and watch it in big numbers. And so baseball's got to continue to make some adjustments to keep up with that. And so if that means adding some new teams and some new markets, I think the competitive side for me is a little, you know, you're going to add some more teams, but you guys still got some teams that are continuing to not be competitive year after year, which I think is a major issue when you talk about competitive balance and adding more teams to it. You know, but I think the realignment, I think it makes sense depending on what you're looking at and geographically, if you can make the schedule a little bit more even across, and if you can start to get teams to play maybe more games against teams that are more geographically close to them, you know, it might help with the fan base. So I'm sure they have their reasons. They kick it around. One of the reasons that we heard they didn't want to do it is they didn't want to change all the letterhead and all the other things going from National League to American League was an answer we got from the top. At that point, they weren't real interested in massive realignment. I thought that was interesting.
Well, I know there is an expense there, but I mean, come on.
I think they're doing okay, maybe.
Yeah, you're fine. Yeah.
You know, when you talk about growing the game, I feel like, one, I think the pitch clock was a surprising boost. I think it makes a game more approachable, more manageable for fans, kind of knowing a bit more what to expect. But I'd like to get your take on this with, you know, every team. You're playing American League teams, you're playing National League teams. Right now, you're seeing every team. You're not always playing a team in your division. it seems that younger fans are really fans of players even outside their area and not with their local team. You may be in St. Louis, or you may be where in Florida, but you love Aaron Judge. You definitely see it with like the NBA and the NFL. Is there that pull in the MLB in the same way that we see Gen Z fans pulling towards players in the NBA and the NFL over sometimes over teams?
Well, I'll tell you, my son, Mason Wynn's his favorite player. Mm-hmm. We were at a baseball tournament this year, and they were selling jerseys, and he won an Aaron Judge jersey. So he bought an Aaron Judge jersey, and he rocks it all the time, you know. And I'm like, hey, man, your dad played for the Cardinals, still kind of works for the Cardinals, and you're wearing a Yankees jersey. But, hey, if that's what keeps you interested and that's who you want to root for, I'm all for it. You know, like, I just want you to be a fan of the game. And whatever goes into that, I'm okay with, you know, because like you said, we need young fans. And it's harder too, like, to get your kids to sit down and hey, let's watch a game. You know, they want to go play a video game, or they want to do this, or they want to do that. And to sit down and watch a game on TV, I definitely do see it, you know, having the younger kids. So whatever it takes, you know, we go down to the ball game. He enjoys it. He enjoys going down there, and we'll watch it. He likes to, you know what's going on, who's winning, losing. But it's definitely different to see it through their eyes and everything they have and, you know, access to now. And, you know, the fact that he'll sit down and still watch the game, and whether he wants to wear an Aaron Judge jersey or not, I'm good with it. But, yeah, I definitely think it's different. And I definitely think, you know, your superstars are always going to draw more attention, right? And the league needs that. We have some great superstars in the game right now that are very marketable and are fun to watch and doing some amazing things. And so I think that's just kind of part of it.
Love talking baseball with you, Kyle. Appreciate it today. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Kyle McClellan, former Cardinals pitcher. The Chatter's Box is his podcast. You should listen to that wherever you get your podcast. Cardinals.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Will play tonight against the Marlins. It is here on KMOX, the pregame show, at 4:45. It's Chris and Amy. Thank God we're not boring, Amy.
I'm so...
The promo says so.
I hope not.
It implies it.
Well, because life's too short.
Right.
For boring radio.
And you're going to die.
I think life is long. Let's waste your time with us. At any rate...
I love that promo.
That's a good promo. Going back to what Kyle McClellan said about his son... Mason Wynn, his favorite player, loves the Cardinals, but he got an Aaron Judge jersey. A family member of mine, 11 years old, loves the Kansas City Chiefs, right? That's his favorite team.
Yeah.
He has like 4 Derrick Henry jerseys.
Well, Derrick
because
Henry
he loves
is
Derrick Henry.
Yeah. The running back. He's awesome.
Yeah. And so I think there is something with the younger generations. Now, the high schoolers that, you know, I are in my life, whether it's family or friends and whatever, man, one, NBA is huge with Gen Z. Is it fair to say NBA is bigger with the younger generations, or is that just the perception?
I don't know the numbers.
They're
but
all about the NBA.
Yeah, it seems like it's always appealed to younger crowds.
In general, like generation after generation.
Yeah, I'd say the last 15, 20 years it has.
Yeah.
But also, it's like a thing to wear a basketball jersey, you know, if you're Gen Z going to Lollapalooza. I don't know what it is, but they all have basketball jerseys.
Well, I don't know if they are going to Lollapalooza. I should have asked them. Excuse me, sir.
I don't know what it is.
Are you going to Lollapalooza?
It's like a thing.
Interesting.
For some reason.
Hey, guess what we're giving away today?
Blues tickets.
Yeah, not Lollapalooza. Blues tickets.
For the opener. The home opener.
Home opener. October 9th.
Yep.
Against the Minnesota Wild.
Not right now, though. Don't start calling in right now. But we are going to give those tickets away before the show is over. So you have to be listening for your chance to win. This show, not only is it not boring, but it's also very giving.
You could say it's the opposite, though. You could say that we're boring, so we have to bribe people to keep listening.
Whatever works.
I know.
Sometimes people just want to cruise through the day, you know? You don't want to be all stimulated.
No, not all day.
What do you want all that for?
You need to just turn us on, like the show, and yeah.
Yuck. Hour three of the show.
Leave the show on, is what I mean.
With you until 12 o'clock today, then the Gas House Gang. It's Ollie Day. Oliver Marmol joins the show at 12. Tom Ackerman, Bernie Miklas, and me will be with Ollie, so you'll want to stick around for that. But we got another hour on the Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.